You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Welcome to Unemployed Workers Fight Back.
Join your hosts Anne
and Kevin, that's me,
the second and fourth Friday of each month on The Sewer Show.
Between 5.30 and 6.30pm.
Here on 3CR Community Radio.
This is a show where we explore macroeconomic solutions
for the unemployed and underemployed.
Everyone in our community has value. Welcome to Unemployed Workers Fight Back. How are you, Anne?
Hello, Kevin, and hello to our lovely Larry and Larissa. We always like having them along for this ride into macroeconomics.
Do you reckon people are really interested in macroeconomics, Anne?
I have to pretend for my own sanity, Kevin, that they are.
I guess that's our job. Our job is to try and make macroeconomics, and you can just feel the glaze coming over. But wait, if you're thinking to turn it away from the dial right now when we're speaking about macroeconomics, don't. It's very, very interesting.
I said the M word, didn't I?
I think we should start with something a little more interesting than macroeconomics.
Oh, do tell.
Well, do you know where I was last weekend, Anne?
I can guess. I think you might have been at a certain music festival I kept hearing about over and over.
The Lockhart Music Festival. And look, we're going to digress from macroeconomics just a little bit because
this is the music part of macro.
It was a very interesting weekend. I got down early and helped set up and help pack up afterwards. And I went down on the Wednesday. And the Wednesday was, I got there Wednesday afternoon. It was lovely. And Thursday, beautiful day. Set up, you know, had to run cables and run power for the, you know, for the coffee machine and
lighting. Well, you're doing it through meadows, are you?
Yeah, it was beautiful, and we're on this hillside, and it's down near the 12 Apostles, and at the top of the hill you're looking out over the Southern Ocean, and there's this little
beautiful
little river winding through and the rest of it. First day, Friday, beautiful. It's like 21 degrees and great bands playing and everybody's just vibing and having a great time. And then Saturday evening,
let me guess, was there wind as well as rain?
It was amazing. There was rain on the Saturday, and the bands are great. But there was a kind of like a big stretchy marquee set up, and around 6 or 7 in the evening they have a comedy hour, and there's comedians playing, and there's a comedian there going through his routine, when this almighty front just blew the whole festival sideways. It blew it off its wheels. It was just nuts. There was a backdrop on the stage which tore to pieces. There's water literally coming in sideways. And this guy's trying to go through his routine, and he's just going, I give up.
At what point do you just give up, really?
And he recovered and he came back again. Anyway, so at that stage, the stage shut down. There was water in everything. The water and electricity.
Electronics and water.
Don't mix. So all the backline gear's full of water. All the three-phase plugs are full of water. And the call was made, we've got to shut the stage down. This is dangerous. Mm-hmm. So
you put your rubber gloves on, did you?
Well, no. So we're all in this marquee, and there's probably 300 or 400 in this marquee, and the water's beginning to flow through under our feet. It was on grass, and you could feel it coming through.
Moving floor at that point.
Yeah, and from that stage on, like this is 6 or 7 in the evening, the comedians kept us entertained for a little while. Mm. And then there were a couple of DJs that were going to come on later on. Milo Eastwood, who's on PBS, is one of the DJs, and Harvey Sutherland, who is just a magnificent performer, was going to do a set, but he's also an excellent DJ. And we partied on until about 4 in the morning. It just went off. It was
under the marquee.
Under the marquee, 400 of us. It was one of the most spontaneous and intimate and just loveliest music festival things that I've been involved in. So I think we're going to start the show this evening with a little bit of Harvey Sutherland.
We've written in this book. It's hard to explain in one take, but these problems have kept me away. And we can't just paint with a broad brush. It's best we listen and not rush. You know we got what it takes to show love. Let's get together, reach out and touch. It's time we try to make things right. Our time to take this thing in flight. We got to lace our strings up tight. Not much time left to reach the sky. It's time we try to make things right. Our time to take this thing in flight. Lace our strings up tight. Not much time left to reach the sky. I'm trying to keep this feeling of love inside. I'm trying to keep this feeling of love inside. Ooh-oh. I'm trying to keep this feeling of love inside. I'm trying to keep this feeling. I'm trying to keep this feeling of love inside. I'm trying to keep this feeling of love inside. I'm trying to keep this feeling of love inside. I'm trying to keep this feeling. So let's bridge all the gaps that exist. It's come time for love to persist. We need to realign our energies and get on the same frequencies, yeah. It's time we try to make things right. Our time to take this thing in flight. We got to lace our strings up tight. Not much time left to reach the sky. It's time we try to make things right. Our time to take this thing in flight. We got to lace our strings up tight. Not much time left to reach the sky. I'm trying to keep this feeling of love inside. I'm trying to keep this feeling of love inside. Ooh, ooh. I'm trying to keep this feeling of love inside. I'm trying to keep this feeling. I'm trying to keep this feeling of love inside. I'm trying to keep this feeling of love inside. Ooh, ooh. I'm trying to keep this feeling of love inside. I'm trying to keep this feeling.
Australia's most iconic bike riding holiday, the Great Vic Bike Ride, is on from Saturday 26th of November to Sunday 4th of December. This rolling bike festival will have you pedalling along the beautiful Great Ocean Road, through the Otways and Golden Plains. Tickets include all meals, a camping spot, luggage transfers, daily entertainment and more. Sign up at www.greatvic.com.au. Use promo code 3CR to get 10% off. Great Vic Bike Ride, a 3CR supporter.
So that was my little ode to the Great Ocean Road, because the Great Vic Bike Ride this year is going along the Great Ocean Road, which would be good. I'd I've done the Great Vic Bike Ride before. It's good. It's well worth doing, you know. It's excellent.
Yeah.
And Lockhart Music Festival was down on the Great Ocean Road. And
it's such a beautiful backdrop to all those things.
It was very dramatic over the weekend. Mm. Yeah, it was excellent. Now, I'm just going to say one thing about something that I noticed. It's interesting going to music festivals and you're hanging out with all these people and they all seem, you know, hip and cool and you're sort of thinking these are a bunch of alternative hipsters, etc. And they are.
They're you're seeing them in their glitter and their flares.
Yeah, yeah. And people go away on those weekends and they try to create the world that they'd like the world to be just for a weekend, which is why I love going to music festivals. Yeah. So everybody's full of really good spirit. And then I always get surprised. I was speaking to one guy. Oh, yeah. And he says, yeah, I work. I didn't ask him. He told me, so yeah, I work for the NAB. And you find all these corporates working there. And they're sort of like he said, oh, look, it's a great job and we're with a great crew and the rest of it.
Mm.
But one thing which kind of I'm beginning to understand is that people are kind of, they're captured by the system these days. And I'm drawing a bit of a long bow here, but I reckon the tradies and the people who work physically, who have something to show, have a better state of mind than the people who are not doing something which is so tangible. That might just be my own.
Well, you're seeing people have their outlet from their corporate life.
Yeah, yeah. It's something which I'm going to investigate. That might be me imposing my values on a whole bunch of people. You know, incorrectly.
You're going to stand there with a clipboard at the next festival.
Say, do you really enjoy your life? From 1 to 10, do you enjoy your life a lot? How much releases this week?
A clipboard and a couch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, but that's me rambling on. What have you got?
I do think, Kevin, that we could have a look at some of the economic news lately, just have a bit of a poke around in it.
Sure.
And might lead with what I think is the lead story of what's been going on in the past month.
Mm-hmm.
And you will never believe it, but the lead story is what happened to Liz Truss.
Liz Truss, the former very short reigning
yes, British Prime Minister of the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
Was leader of the Conservative Party, otherwise known as the Tories.
She was in for days, like a month and
literally,
a bit.
Literally, less than 2 months.
Than 2 months, which was by far the shortest, it's not reign, the shortest
tenure.
tenure of a Prime Minister in British history. Yeah.
And she has now been replaced by Rishi Sunak, who as soon as I heard he was going in, my heart just sank for all of the hardworking people in the UK.
I don't know much about him. He seems very smooth talking.
Yeah. He likes to think of himself as the king of austerity and he's living up to his name.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, as you and I are both very aware, Kevin, that probably 99% of what the dominant or the mainstream media talks about or what passes for commentary about economics, you know, what passes for analysis and information about economics, 99% of that, and I have to say this to make myself clear, is bullshit.
You just swore, Anne. I've never heard you say
I
that
have
before.
To say it because I don't want people to think I'm being nice when I say it's all lies and propaganda.
Yeah, well, I'm surprised because you always behave yourself linguistically on this show, and that's the first time I've ever heard it drop one. And so this must be pretty.
So I'm winding up to the big news here.
Okay.
Yes, and in fact, I got. Despite having this filter, which you and I have developed through knowing our modern monetary theory, so we look at things with a pretty skeptical eye, but when it came to Liz Truss, Kevin, I was duped.
Yeah?
Yep, I fell for it. Hook, line and sinker.
Talk me through it.
Yep. So her crime, apparently, the reason she was deposed was because she bought in a budget that everyone was calling economically irresponsible because it was full of these supposedly unfunded tax cuts. Now, how can a tax cut be unfunded to start with? There's no such thing as funding or not funding a tax cut when you're the currency issuing government, like the UK, like Australia, like the USA. You can always find dollars when you take dollars out of the economy or you're putting them back in through tax cuts.
I'll just shorthand that. What you're saying is taxes do not fund government spending. Now, people who are uninitiated to this might wonder how that works. Believe me, it's just have a look at World War II, have a look at COVID.
Right. So supposedly Liz's mistake was to have this irresponsible budget, which was all these tax cuts were supposedly only benefiting the wealthy, and that's why they were so terrible.
Right.
So, of course, I fell hook, line and sinker for this idea that suddenly the establishment does not like helping the top end of town, right? That was the story that was going around.
Well, hang on, but Liz Truss was helping the top end of town. She was going to give tax cuts to the wealthy, which... Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's why the wealthy got rid of her?
Yeah,
so there's more to this story. Okay. So I was walking around thinking that this is why she was ousted. And it is only thanks to an episode of a podcast called Macro and Cheese.
This is the one you're telling me that I need to listen to, and I will.
Yep.
I will. Okay.
Yep. Which is hosted by Steve Grumbine. And I highly recommend, if you like listening to podcasts, go and subscribe to Macro and Cheese. And that podcast is put out by Real Progressives in America. And on this particular episode, which is a recent one of theirs, they were interviewing Thomas Farzi. Now, is that a name that's familiar to you?
Thomas Farzi co-authored a book with Bill Mitchell. What was the name of the
They both wrote the Reclaim the State book.
Which is a heavy read, but a really good read. If you ever, after a good smash.
A good explanation of what's been going on in the economy for the last 40 years. And, of course, we follow the work of Professor Bill Mitchell quite closely on this show.
Yes.
So the Thomas Farzi, I think, he gave one of the most incisive analyses of what happened to Liz Truss. And it wasn't just, to me, eye-opening. It was actually quite horrifying. And I have to admit, I think that's because... You know, when I look at the world through the MMT lens, I have to admit that I don't really apply it to geopolitics that often.
Right.
Because I find geopolitics so repellent and depressing. I just don't want to look.
Yes, fair enough.
But Thomas Farzi, he's made of stronger stuff. What was happening in the mainstream, and I'll just read some of the kind of language that was being used to describe what Liz did, which was that her proposals to make these unfunded tax cuts triggered an immediate economic meltdown. And that was because the UK pound hit a record low of £1.03 against the US dollar. So the pound plummeted in the international currency market.
Almost a parity with the US dollar.
Mm. And then apparently, according to the mainstream media, the stock markets deemed the deficit financed tax cuts to be inflationary. And that was why the pound started sinking. And then there was a bond sell-off somehow, which caused the interest rates to rise. Or if you're listening to other people, they were saying that the Bank of England intervened and caused interest rates to rise. Either way, economic chaos ensued.
So if I'm going to just try and summarise that in my head, what they were saying is that by giving tax cuts to the wealthy, it was going to be an inflationary policy at a time when there's already high inflation, and that was their main concern.
That's right. That's the story.
Yep.
And so then there was a run on the bonds, and that caused the interest rates, and there was a selling off of the pound and so on.
Just a little juxtaposition on that. If she promised tax cuts to the working classes, we could do call it class, to workers, to ordinary income earners, they probably made the same noises. But how would you and I feel about that if the tax cuts were directed to those on lesser incomes rather than those, because you expect the Tories to...
How you and I feel probably doesn't play into it.
I know. I'm just going through the mental
exercise. But you're getting towards what Thomas Farzi was saying. So, but before I get on to what his explanation was, I just want to give you a sense of the feeding frenzy that sort of occurred and sort of tore Liz apart. And so we had... all these sort of institutions and big players commenting on what was going on. So the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, apparently they sharply rebuked the UK's tax plan. So can you imagine if the IMF said, well, about Australia, well, Jim Chalmers, he's just not doing a good enough job. That's pretty full on for them to do that.
It's not good press.
No. And then there was apparently an exceptionally rare rebuke from the leader of an allied nation. So in the form of the US President Joe Biden, he called Truss's economic plan a mistake.
A mistake.
Yep. So he's out and out criticising her. The kind of language that the media was using about Liz Truss and her treasurer or chancellor was that they were libertarian jihadists carrying out ultra free market experiments.
Whoa, okay.
So not putting on the gloves there. They also called it a form of magical thinking drawn up by an administration driven by nothing else but ideology.
Uh-huh.
So there's the pot calling the kettle black. Apparently, Liz's budget trashed the confidence of lenders in Brisbane, and it, listen to this one.
In Brisbane?
In Britain, sorry.
Britain, because I don't think they care about Brisbane that much.
I think my notes were on a fold there.
People in Brisbane don't like our policies.
Crashed the confidence of lenders in Britain. And it crashed the last chance the government had to borrow, which would have been the normal Keynesian way to ease an oncoming recession.
To borrow. See, this, like, when you're an MMT, that just doesn't, you sort of go, huh? It
absolutely makes no sense.
To borrow means to inject currency into the economy.
It makes no sense to think that a government that issues the pound would need to borrow the pound.
Yeah, so they're injecting currency into the economy without balancing it against taxation, which we don't give two hoots about.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Okay. So I just have to explain these things to myself as we go along. I'm trying to absorb this.
Absolutely. And then, of course, Larry Summers got in on the act. He put the boot in as well.
Who's Larry Summers?
So he is an economist in America, and I think he was an advisor to, I think it was the Bush administration.
So he's an orthodox conservative economist.
Yes, he would call himself a neo-Keynesian, which aren't the real Keynesians,
right.
Apparently.
Yep.
Anyway, he said the UK is behaving a bit like an emerging market, turning itself into a submerging market. Ho-ho.
Right.
So this is a really full-on attack by the establishment throughout the Western world. And it was really Thomas Fazi and Bill Mitchell and others like them started to question, like, what was behind this attack?
Because just hold you up here for a second, because I am trying to absorb all this. Like, some people might think that Anne and I come in prepared for these shows. I don't. She does. Because on the face of it, a conservative government offering tax cuts to the rich, you would think would be fairly well received
by
the conservative, and yet they aren't just
they
turning
went
on it.
Full on attack.
It's almost like this huge leftist policy has been introduced instead. It's like she said, I'm going to introduce forms of socialism.
Yeah. And that's where I was duped, because I was sort of thinking, well, maybe the establishment now is saying that we shouldn't be putting in a lot of tax cuts for the wealthy. Like, maybe they finally figured out that's not what we would call a good targeted way of spending the budget.
So you thought they might have been...
I thought they were softening up a bit.
Enlightened and maybe trying to address inequality or something
Silly
like
me.
That. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so what was behind all this?
So Thomas Fazi, actually, he uses the word coup. He called this a political coup. And this is going to tell us now that in the world of geopolitics, you can use financial mechanisms to remove a government just as well as if you sent the military in.
Right.
So it's pretty rotten to the core, this stuff. And it also shows you why Thomas Fazi was calling it a coup, and what he was saying was really going on is he looks at this budget, and it turns out that these tax cuts were not the biggest spend in the budget.
Right.
So they were pretty big. Like there was £40 billion worth of tax cuts. But also in this same budget, there was a £100 billion spend, and that was this energy price guarantee. Now, what was the energy price guarantee doing? It was effectively capping the price of energy for households and businesses. So that was where the budget was going to help the working class.
Right. Well, to me, that sounds like a really good thing.
That does, doesn't it? And Thomas Farsi is saying the establishment hated that. So why did they hate it?
So under the guise of the tax cuts for the wealthy being inflationary, their real issue was
this thing that they call the energy price guarantee.
The energy price guarantee, which was putting a cap on price gouging energy companies, which
That's
is
right.
exactly what we should be doing
That's
here.
That's exactly what we should be doing. So in a way, we would say she had a somewhat enlightened budget. Now, I don't think either of us would endorse the tax cuts, but so this part of it was what Thomas Farsi was noticing. And what he said is the problem was probably the combination of those plus whatever else spending was going on. The problem was that she was doing a gigantic deficit spend. Now, what's a deficit spend? Let's just remind ourselves that when the government spends, it's injecting currency into the economy.
Into the private sector.
And when it taxes, it's pulling money back out of the private sector. And if it spends more than it's taxing, that's what they call a deficit spend, because it looks like a minus on the government side, but it's actually a positive on our side.
In the private sector. And it happens all the time.
That's right.
But they're pulling this line that to run such heavy deficits at this time is going to be inflationary.
Right. And we shouldn't be doing it because it's inflationary. Now, Thomas is saying that they don't want to be doing it because it does two things. The first thing is that it continues to reveal what the COVID lockdown spendings were revealing, which was what? The capacity of the government to deficit spend.
Right.
So that kind of got ripped away during COVID throughout the Western world and no doubt in other countries. And they've been madly trying to pull that veil back over this capacity of the government to spend.
Right.
The other thing that it does is that it shores up the slight shift in the power balance between the capitalist class and the working class. So what happened during the COVID lockdown was that the shift that's gone towards the capitalist class over the neoliberal period, that pendulum started to swing back a little bit as a result of the lockdowns, because one, this deficit spending that they had to do, most of that went to the working class. So people began to realise that the government had the capacity to make their lives easier.
Right.
And in fact, I'm an example of that, because when I got JobKeeper when I was working, my salary actually went up.
Up, right.
My wages went up. The other thing that happened during the pandemic was that we realised who the essential workers really are.
And the fact that they are actually essential.
Mm-hmm. So what really keeps our day-to-day lives going? Delivery drivers, people stocking the supermarket shelves, people working in healthcare. It wasn't actually the guy you met at the festival working for the NAB.
Switching numbers around, yeah.
He was not an essential worker.
Okay, so this is kind of interesting. I'm getting my head around this. So the whole pandemic lifted the ordinary worker out of their previous status of something to be exploited to something to be respected and acknowledged.
Exactly.
And they don't mind that happening in small doses in an emergency occasionally, like a pandemic or a war, but they don't want that any other time.
They don't want that to be the regular thing.
Right.
And the other thing that went on with the pandemic was that it exposed, you know, they keep talking about the fragility of long supply chains.
Yeah.
Now, what long supply chains means is that you're doing a lot of your manufacturing of goods overseas and then you're transporting them back into your country.
Yeah. I like this analogy where if you get a shirt, you know, the cotton comes from India, the thread comes from Bangladesh, the buttons come from Vietnam, and if any one of those ingredients goes missing, you can't make the shirt.
You can't make the shirt, yeah. Exactly. So there's been this talk about shortening your supply chains, which effectively means stop exploiting overseas worker to lower your costs. Means you're going to have to start using local workers for local production, which means your costs will go up.
Yep.
And workers will have more power because you'll start to head towards full employment in your economy. So the pandemic lockdowns exposed all of that. And also there was the Great Resignation that people talk about. And I think that happened probably more in the US where people were not wanting to go back to their exploitative jobs because they were likely to get COVID and get sick and maybe die.
Yeah.
And then they just haven't gone back. But in Australia, we have and what is being called a shortage in the workforce, a labour shortage. And in fact, that was what the Jobs Summit was all about, addressing this labour shortage. Our labour shortage came from losing our migrant workforce.
Yes.
And they were the exploited part of our workforce. So a million of them left the country because Morrison told them to go home.
Well, there was no support for them.
There was absolutely no support. He told them just to get out of the country. And we're still down about 500,000 workers.
Yeah.
So for all those reasons, there's been a shift in power back to the labour force. And Fazi is saying that what they want to do is stop that shift in power by what they call tightening the economy. Tightening the economy means don't do big deficit spends that help the working class. And also, at the same time, why don't we raise interest rates? And that's the first time listening to him that I had heard the raising of interest rates called austerity. So it's part of an austerity approach because it is a method that attacks, again, it takes money out of people's pockets. It takes money from the working class.
And we've talked about this. Interest rates affect people who have loans. Wealthy people who have paid off their properties and are well set up don't have loans. They don't give a stuff about interest rates because they're not paying interest because they don't have loans. They've got assets. Interest rates affect people who have loans, and particularly the most vulnerable, which would be like you can't be a low income earner and buy a house these days. But people who are first home buyers who are stretched to the nines. They get hit hard by this.
So do renters, because the landlords pass that cost on to renters as well.
Yeah, so first home buyers and renters. I was speaking to a friend of mine, Kathy down in Tassie, just recently, and her son is exactly in that boat, spent all this time saving up for a deposit to buy a house that he's really stretched on. He's operating as a single parent and is going to have to offload. He can't afford it, you know.
Yep. So the squeeze is on, and they want to keep the squeeze on because they don't want people to understand how the economy really works. And they, as Thomas Fazi says, they got the result that they wanted, which wasn't just getting rid of Liz Truss. She was just like the bunny in the headlights. It was actually installing somebody like Rishi Sunak, because what's he going to do? He's got this story he's now running around with, that he's got to find £40 billion worth of spending cuts. And so now he's imposing this austerity budget, which Bill Mitchell called an exercise in absurdity and public harm. And Bill reckons that his budget is going to reduce the UK spending by about 10%. As you go into a recession, which is precisely the opposite thing. You probably want to increase your spending by 20%.
This is just called not learning from history. This is what do you do during the Great Depression? You tighten that's just nuts.
Yeah. In fact, I heard Steve Keen say the other day that the Great Depression didn't have to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was human made.
Yeah.
And just one last thing on this. This is the part that really made my blood run cold, because there are a few lessons we can take away from this, and I think the minor one is, like, once again we have to believe that international finance markets can dictate government policy.
Yeah.
Like, can you really believe that the bond vigilantes are dictating what the UK government can do? The other thing is that I came across this article that really represents the problem here. It was in Forbes magazine, and the headline read, "Climate Policy Lesson from Liz Truss's Resignation. Beware of Budget Deficits." And in this article it said, "Liz Truss's resignation provides an important lesson for," guess who, "the climate movement. The lesson being decarbonisation should be accomplished without inflation and budgetary deficits." Now, you and I know, Kevin, that decarbonisation can only happen with budgetary deficits.
Yeah, you need government spending to promote non-carbon, non-fossil fuel
to do all of the transition that we need.
You've got to rebuild the grid. You've got to set up charging stations for electric cars. All of this needs to happen with government spending, which will be deficit spending, to put it in the orthodox term. So this is just...
So I just imagine someone's holding Liz Truss's head by the hair, saying, we have just shown that you can't have budgetary deficits. And I think, Kevin, if the single most insane thought that is in humanity at the moment is that we cannot afford to deal with climate change. We can't find the dollars. We can't find the pounds.
It's just, it is insanity. It is insanity. It's just keep doing what we're doing and we'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work? Yep.
And that tells me that the capitalist markets, they're circling the wagons again, and they're trying to not let the change happen.
Okay, I think we need to take a moment to let that sink in.
Indeed.
We'll come back and...
we'll come back with some good news, actually.
Excellent. Righto.
You're listening to Unemployed Workers Fight Back,
a show all about the economics and experience
of unemployment and underemployment.
Here on 3CR Community Radio.
There are now 189 people on hunger strike. 62 have sewn their lips together, including two women and five children. For Woomera, this isn't an unusual day.
We have an old saying in Persia that says there is no darker color than black. So we were in the camp, we have two options. Either deporting us to back to persecution, to prison, to death, or die in the camp. But I think you guys give us a third option, which is another try.
They bent like half-cooked spaghetti. We didn't expect it to happen like that, to the soundtrack of Amelie, a popular French movie at the time, blowing across the desert from dusty speakers. The fence began to fall, under the weight of people wanting justice, under the weight of people that had had enough.
Join us for Woomera Stories on Monday, November 21st and November 28th at 6 p.m. on 3CR.
This afternoon, already they've set up camp only 200 metres from the Woomera Detention Centre's main gate.
Join us for the 2022 edition of The Change, Definitions of Freedom, interactive theatre, 7 to 9 p.m. on the 16th of December at the Honda Showrooms, Hoddle Street. We're also having an exhibition and preview from 5 p.m. Thursday, 24th of November at The Store, Abbotsford Convent. Find out more on Facebook at The Change Definitions of Freedom. The Change is presented by United Struggle Project, a 3CR supporter.
3CR, here to stay.
So that was, and just fading out in the background, that was Party Dozen. They played on the Friday night.
It's great.
Well, it was pretty mellow, that one. Mm. The rest of their stuff's pretty raucous. It's like a two-piece, fella on drums and a girl on saxophone, and she sings into the bell of her microphone, of her saxophone, and it's got all this echo, and it's...
Oh, wow.
It was amazing to watch. Great bands. That was
what
good.
What was the name again?
Party Dozen. Party Dozen. That song was called Risky Behaviour. Most of their stuff is pretty over the top. That was a nice quiet
You always
one.
Find the mellow ones
well,
for me,
I
don't
wanna,
you?
I don't want to freak people out too much, you know, like we're trying to ease into a Friday night. So, yeah. I was thinking about just what we were talking about before with the British, like they're obviously, it's a conservative government. They are neoliberal, proudly neoliberal. And we've now got a Labor government who are trying to reinstate some IR laws to boost union and worker power here.
Right.
We've kind of got two different programs running on the different sides of the world here. It'd be interesting to compare and contrast.
I was thinking about that too, and I after looking into this, I got a real sense of the kind of pressures that the Australian government on whoever's in power would be facing, but particularly a Labor government. Like Jim Chalmers and co will have to be treading a very fine line not to upset the establishment the way Liz Truss did.
Yeah, well, you've already seen the minerals.
Yes, they did that with the carbon taxes.
They're launching this campaign. You know, they're all ganging up on about the IR reforms. They don't want to see. They don't want to see unions or workers have increased. They're trying to crush that. So this brings something up. I'm just going to diverge here for a second. I know you want to get onto something.
Off script, people. That's okay.
So I'm staying with a lovely person, Christabel, down on the peninsula at the moment, who is. A senior citizen. She's well into her 90s, and she's been an activist for 60 years.
There's a perspective, long perspective.
Yeah, she reckons she started becoming active and going to protests and becoming involved in protests back in the 1960s.
Good on her.
And she's a bit despondent because she thinks it's like things haven't happened quickly enough, and that that it's been a waste of time. And I had to reassure her to say that she's quite inspiring, that she's inspired her daughter, who I know, and I can speak to other people, and we keep some energy behind the whole progressive movement. But I reckon we're dragging our feet. I've been speaking to Chris, I'm full of admiration for her, and I just think to myself, we need to do more. We need to actually step up, you know, to push back against these very forces that you're talking about in the UK and here. These mobs with money, and they're always going to have more money than us, so they can buy the ads and they can influence the masses who suck this stuff up, they sponge it up. I don't know what, but
you never know what ripple effects you're going to have, do you? When you're talking about inspiring you and her daughter and so on.
Yeah.
And I often think too, how would you have felt as an activist when you're into about year 100 of slavery in America?
Oh, yeah.
Because that went on for 300 years.
So you've got to try. The thing is, we actually have, well, slavery was important and needed to finish, and talking about life and death, but we've got a finite world. And we're pushing up against it.
But the good news is, we are the good news show, because we know, Kevin, and I think we could get the word out there that anything that is technically doable, if you've got the know-how, if you've got the people, if you've got the materials, it's always financially doable. So we can stop worrying about the money. And we know we actually have the answers for dealing with climate change. They're sitting at our feet, and all we have to do is pick up the tools and use them.
We've got to activate. I think we have to get pushier. The other thing I noticed when I went to this music festival is that I'm going to use the frame younger people. I'm generally older in the crowd. They seem reluctant to confrontation. They're resistant to confrontation, and it's almost like they've been trained to behave themselves. And you sort of think about the protests back in the 60s and the 70s, and you sort of think like the Extinction Rebellion thing that's going on at the moment. I really like that. That's front foot activism. But we've got state governments right around the country increasing the penalties. Jail terms and massive fines to combat the likes of Extinction Rebellion. And And that needs to be pushed back, because Extinction Rebellion aren't doing it just for a bit of fun.
Right.
They're talking about, you know, life and death. They're talking about the health of the planet. And you're talking about Victorian governments. Now, I don't know how the election is going to go tomorrow, but the Victorian government just recently increased the fines for people protesting against loggers, etc., enormously. And they used the mental health of loggers, of people driving the trucks, as their reason for it.
Wow. What about my mental health for losing forest?
Yeah, or, you know, losing the world, etc. And there's no case studies for it. It's some deal that's been done somewhere, you know, and this whole Victorian, you know, government logging program is highly dubious. I need to have more of a look at that.
Yes.
But I think what I'm saying is, we need to step up. Mm-hmm. We need to make more trouble. We need to become more confrontationalist. We need to push back against these orthodox, conservative, short-sighted, profit-driven companies and organisations. They're pulling strings, and they are, you know, good.
Yep. Well, anyway. change is in the wind. And shall we get on to the good news?
Yes.
All right. The good news is actually me with my little bit of schadenfreude here, which is that during the earlier this month, the world's second largest cryptocurrency exchange imploded. And of course, when you know you're MMT, you get a bit of a gleeful kind of joy out of something like that happening.
Cryptocurrency. I mean, the word currency for crypto, to me, I struggle with calling it a currency, but yeah.
And so you should. In fact, the reason why we laugh about this is because from the MMT perspective, cryptocurrency is not a currency. It's not a form of money, despite what they want you to think. In fact, they call it an asset. So this is where you need to really understand the difference between currency and an asset.
Well, now, I was having a discussion. I was down in Tassie, down at Egg and Bacon Bay, about an hour south of Hobart, a few weeks ago. I forget where I've been just
recently.
What did
you call it?
It's called Egg and Bacon Bay.
Is it really?
Yeah, yeah. I was staying with my friend Kathy. She needed some help renovating a place down there. Yeah. And we went for a walk along this lovely little beach down there and came across, there's all these like progressive, like almost hippies down there. Like anyway, so there's a couple, they're both artists. They do computer art and stuff. And Kathy introduced me and said that I was into economics, etc. And I thought their eyes would glaze over it. And this young fella, he starts talking about fractional reserves, and he's all over it. He's like, I'm going, wow, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he engaged me in conversation. But he was really interested in crypto. And I said, look, governments are going to have to accept cryptocurrency as a legitimate currency, etc. And I said, no. I said it doesn't meet any of the hallmarks of a currency.
Right.
Currencies are used by governments to control their population, and that can be a good thing, you know, like they can raise the price of cigarettes so that you stop smoking. But it's there predominantly as a form of government control.
Well, it's coercive, as they say, at its base, but it's really about how you coordinate activity amongst a population to get stuff done. And the way you do that is you issue the unit of account, and then you take taxes in that unit of account, and it's the taxing that's coercive.
You give it and you take it away, and you're controlling that input and that output of the currency, and that helps.
It drives the desire for the currency, and then people work for the currency, and then it starts being used as a medium of exchange.
It regulates behaviour, you know. A cryptocurrency is not created by a sovereign state, so it doesn't meet any of those requirements.
It does not. In fact, shall I tell you what requirements it does meet, or did you want to finish the story of this fellow?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so I spoke to him, and he sort of went, oh, yeah, he wasn't quite sure. And the very next day, the bottom fell out of the crypto market.
You felt vindicated.
Well, you know.
I hope he didn't lose too much.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. In fact,
it was a very nice fellow. This is what surprises me. I meet all these.
Well, it's understandable, because they're trying to find the alternative. What they should be railing against is the lack of deficit spending, but they don't understand that because of this veil that we've been talking about.
True.
And so they're looking for what's the non-government, you know, way of doing things.
True that, Anne. True.
So speaking of losing money, the fellow who was running this cryptocurrency exchange, Sam Bankman-Fried, which I hadn't heard about him, but apparently he's quite well known, he lost a personal worth of about $30 billion.
Yeah, but okay, so 30, but
$30 billion of imaginary money.
Is he broke now?
Well, Apparently, there were some weird things going on shortly before the collapse of his exchange. $10 billion in client funds was secretly transferred to a hedge fund that he owns.
Right, yep.
And somehow in amongst it all, hackers got into it and took off with $30 million. So the whole thing was a bit of a mess.
It's just dodgy, isn't it?
And Bloomberg called this one of history's greatest destructions of wealth. And in fact, since its crash, more than US $150 billion has been wiped off the value of the top 10 crypto coins.
Boy.
And so...
I've got thoughts going on over in my head, Anne. Remind me to get back to the thought.
Let's remind ourselves. Kevin's had a thought.
I've had a thought. ding, ding. Did you hear it? Yeah.
So the ABC had an interesting article by business editor Ian Verender. In which he gave one of the best descriptions of cryptocurrency that I've heard. He says that cryptocurrencies devolved primarily to serve two key functions: to act as a cover for money laundering and terrorism, and provide fertile ground for scammers trying to fleece investors, all the while causing a huge environmental damage through the electricity required to so-called mine coins.
Yeah, this always because cryptocurrency requires computers to speak to computers to verify everything through the blockchain.
Yep. So these computers are whirring away and churning through electricity.
Yep.
So the sooner the whole thing falls over, the better, as far as I can tell.
It's pure speculation, Anne, the cryptocurrency. Mm. There's no currency to it. Crypto is...
It's an asset. So by an asset, what you mean is something that you think has value and therefore you buy it. And, of course, the only value it has is, as Ian Verender says, is to help terrorists and other nefarious activities, because cryptocurrency is anonymous. It's even less traceable than cash.
Right.
But they always have to turn it back into cash if they want to use it for anything.
Yeah. It's kind of like speculation of the human mind is all it is, which I suppose applies to a lot of things. But there's no product to it. It is just, I'm going to have a crypto dollar today and I'm hoping tomorrow that it's going to go through the roof and then I'll have lots of crypto dollars.
That's what speculation is.
It's pure speculation. It's like speculation in one of its most purest forms.
Yes, it is. It's not even a tulip, is it? No. Unfortunately, Ian, who understands that crypto is kind of useless, he sort of veered towards what we would say, and then he veered away again, because he explained that it's not like a dollar. A dollar only has value when someone believes that value exists, usually based upon a guarantee from a sovereign government. Now, we don't quite agree with that, because we say that the value of the dollar comes from the fact that the government taxes in the dollar. It's not about what people believe, unlike cryptocurrency.
Yeah. If you earn money, then the government will tax you at a certain rate. That kind of grounds it.
Anyone in your population who needs to pay taxes in dollars will want to earn dollars. So you don't have to be the one being taxed, but if there's anyone who's got to pay a fine or a tax in the dollar, that is what is going to make them want dollars, which is why you can give them dollars.
Yeah.
For, you know, when you're buying and selling.
Oh, I forgot what my thought was.
Now, what is your thought?
Oh, my thought was this. Okay, so cryptocurrency and regular currency, and this is a conversation we've had before about, especially living in this continent, where up until a couple hundred years ago, they didn't have currency. And the big gripe that I have with currency is that you can accumulate wealth and power. And it's bad enough that you can accumulate wealth and power just through currency, like dollars, etc. And by this, I mean, if you save up enough money, you can buy other people and they will do things for you that you want them to do.
A la Rupert Murdoch?
A la, yeah, you know. And
Gina Reinhart?
So how do these people have so much influence? They've got so much money. It's not that they've got a whole bunch of really good ideas.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that they've got a whole bunch of money.
Right.
And crypto,
so money does distort things.
Yeah, and cryptocurrency is like an even worse version of that in many respects. You know, like I've just got all this money and now I'm going to manipulate conditions around me. It might be good, but probably not, because if you want that much wealth and power, probably you're not driven by the right motives. I'm just having a real problem with the accumulation of wealth and the rubbish that goes. I want a Star Trek post monetary society.
Well, if you were opposed to the accumulation of wealth, you'd advise people to invest in cryptocurrency because it's going to vanish pretty quick.
It could just vanish overnight. There's nothing.
Well, it did. $150 billion worth of it went down the drain.
I wish a whole lot of go. Just bang. I wish one crypto dollar was worth a buck again. You know. Just,
and the other thing, I mean, I'll just leave it on this note, is if you're wondering why the central banks are looking at this, they're looking at digital currency, which is different from cryptocurrency. So we won't go into the differences because I don't even quite understand all of it, but it's definitely cryptocurrency is just one of those great speculative bubbles that is going to go pop.
Yeah, it's a very dicey world, the cryptocurrency stuff. But you know what, Anne? Approaching that time of the evening again where we need to make way for Vicky and her excellent show, Mafalda.
The wonderful Mafalda.
Yeah.
Before we go, we did get an email from somebody last week. So I'll just let people know if they want to contact us.
Oh, yep.
It is radiommt@gmail.com. Radiommt for Modern Monetary Theory @gmail.com.
Just send us an email about anything you want. And one thing we're going to talk about in the future, because I've been speaking to Stephen Hale about this just recently, he's trying to figure out what happens to all the money with increased interest rates.
Where does that money go?
Where does it go? Does it make the banks rich? And he said, it's complicated. We need to have a conversation. I haven't had that conversation yet. So we're going to get back to that one as well. But let's get out of the way because Vicky's here and we need to get it skedaddle. So see you
next time.
Soon.
You've been listening to Unemployed Workers Fight Back.
Join us the second and fourth Friday of each and every month as part of the Sewer Show on 3CR.
Listen to this show as a podcast by going to 3cr.org.au.
We thank all our guests, and I thank you, Anne.
And I thank you, Kevin.
No, the pleasure was all mine.
Oh no, Kevin, the pleasure was all mine.
You mean all the pleasure was yours?
Kevin, I think I took all the pleasure on this one.
Well, if you took all the pleasure, that means there's no pleasure for me at all. I quite enjoyed myself. So if you've got all the pleasure, then what, I had no pleasure?
I think we should share the pleasure.
Well, we're going to have to share the pleasure because, you know, like, I don't mind you having pleasure. That's great. So we have as much pleasure as you like, but don't take all the pleasure.
Well, it was very pleasurable. So I'm glad that it was pleasurable for you and it was pleasurable for me. I think we've got a multiplier of pleasure here.
It's doubly pleasurable. So if it was pleasurable for you in the first place and it was pleasurable for me, well, that's twice as pleasurable as before. That's a good thing.
Double pleasure. What could go wrong?
Nothing could go wrong. Well, we're not for agree. We agree?
I think we could agree to agree.
Agree.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.